Good afternoon. I'm Paul Seavey on behalf of the Colorado Mining Association. I would like to reserve 4 minutes, please, for rebuttal. This case arises under the Colorado Open Records Act, which is part of an overall state policy mandating an open and transparent government in our state. CORA contains an express presumption that, quote, all public records shall be open for inspection by any person. The Colorado Mining Association, or CMA, served several CORA requests on multiple state agencies. Many documents were provided in response, along with affidavits and privilege logs. Many more documents were withheld under a claim of deliberative process privilege. Parties were not able to, even though we tried after several interactions, to agree on the disposition of 147 documents and communications in particular. And it's those, Your Honors, those documents that remain in dispute and which are the subject of this case and were the subject of the district court matter below. The documents produced to date show at least an appearance of impropriety on behalf of the public utility commissioners of this state, if not outright bias. The PUC is the regulatory agency in Colorado charged with regulating public utilities, including the largest in the state, Public Service Company of Colorado. The PUC, based upon these documents and the affidavits of the commissioners, the PUC commissioners were meeting and negotiating policies that affected and were part of the subject matter of the PUC's jurisdiction over PSCO in secret with PSCO and other special interest groups such as natural gas companies. All of the negotiations involved future exercises of the PUC's regulatory activity as well as how it would benefit and be tailored to the business interests of those select entities, PSCO and the gas companies. This is the type of activity that the public interest balancing test under CORA and the Supreme Court's decision in White was designed to allow the public to discover and better understand.
Mr. Seavey, if I can interrupt you, I want to make sure I understand your argument here about the balancing test. Your principal argument, and please correct me, and I note I'm Gabriel, this is Judge Graham. No, thanks, sir. He's so much better looking. Your principal argument here is that the district court failed, I think, to do this balancing test you just alluded to. Am I right about that?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. So, now I think we can all agree, we can read, in the district court's order, denying the motion for reconsideration, the court said, at least implicit in my order, I did the balance, quotes the balancing test. So is your argument really that the court didn't make findings to show that it had done the balancing test?
Our argument is that she started on the test, which has two parts. She erred in how she characterized and started to apply the first factor, and then she didn't conduct the second one at all. And they're not
second one being
the second one in the public's interest in having the disclosure of the information for the public interest in scrutinizing the quality of governmental decision making.
But what do you do with her order on reconsideration, which says, you know, implicit in the court thought explicit, were the findings that the withheld documents didn't contain, reveal, or detail factual conversation with the parties, and that the public interest in protecting the withheld privileged documents substantially outweighed the public interest in disclosure of these privileged documents. The court said exactly what you're saying it didn't.
She recited the test, but she didn't perform the test. And so if the court were to look at all of the record in the case, none of it contains any findings by Judge Lemon that she considered and applied the circumstances in this case as CORA and the White case say the court must do. Any particular withheld documents and assertion of deliberative process privilege has to be applied in the context of the CORA requested issue. She mentioned the test, but doesn't in any manner in any part of the court record below demonstrate that she applied it.
But I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. What else does that mean? I mean, it seems to me you're saying she didn't make findings to show her analysis. I mean, she says, I applied the test. I mean, how are we as an appellate court to say she didn't when she says she did? She did the analysis. So, I'm pushing all just because I'm not sure I'm understanding your argument.
No, that's fine. Our argument is that she abused her discretion by making no findings that evidence that she went through the analysis.
Okay, and I can accept that, and I understand that. So now, can you tell me what case law says she has to make findings where at least we have an indication on the face of her order that she made that she considered the balancing test?
I think the White case is very clear about the fact that she needs to, a district court needs to look at the demonstration of need for purposes of determining whether the deliberative process privilege maintains the government's ability to keep the documents in secret. And so she needs, there is quite a bit of information put in the record by the Mining Association in the court below as to the demonstration of need.
But I understand that, and I'm not, I guess maybe you could help me find in the White case, there's no question the White case says she has to consider that. My question to you is, where does it say she has to make express findings on all those factors? Or where does the statute say that?
I'll start with the White case.
All right.
There is a discussion of, and the court says to reiterate, so it's for the second time in the White decision covering this issue, talking about the deliberative process being a qualified privilege, and that determination of need, determination. So I would ask the court to consider the phrasing of the Supreme Court calling for determination. So findings are one way to make a determination. Reciting the test but not showing any manner of the application of the facts in the context of this QORA request, as White talks about must be done, as well as QORA says must be done, I think is a clear indication that there has to be some demonstration by the court that she has gone through that calculus. That would be one point. The other is that the Supreme Court articulates several factors that are part of the application of that second prong of the test. And her opinion in the order talks about how she articulated rationale under the first prong. She said, oh, there are email communications, and so we don't want to chill government employees from using email. That got it wrong under the first prong. There is something there, but our argument is also, Judge, that she erred there because it's not about the form of the communication. There's nothing sacrosanct about emails. It's the content. And she stopped at the first prong and failed to evaluate under the second prong. I know she recites the test, but she doesn't show any application of it as called for by the White case and by QORA. So that is our argument.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's the second prong of the public interest balancing test that was disregarded by the district court. She did not proceed to weigh whether the public's interest in scrutinizing the government decision-making here required the release of the withheld documents. There's no analysis in the record of her having done so. As I indicated, the only governmental interest the district court articulated was with regard to why the documents should be kept secret, and that is that they are email communications, and she was concerned about releasing emails because of a purported chilling effect on the use of email in the government system. However, as I indicated, the fact that the communications were sent via email is immaterial. The means of the communication are not the issue. The content is. Email communications should not be put before categorically the public's interest in scrutinizing the quality of government decision making and the public's confidence in that decision making process. If the content of an email goes to whether an agency official acting in an adjudicatory capacity, such as a PUC commissioner, is biased, then that communication must be released under the QORA public interest balancing test. Yes, the district court attempted to address the first prong, but it never reached the critical second prong. Further, Judge Graham, as I began to articulate, the district court failed to consider the context of this particular QORA request and the records and affidavits supplied in response to it.
What's the basis, Mr. Seavey, for your statement she failed to consider it? There's lengthy discussion on the record about it, you know, all kinds of colloquy, including on the open meetings law issue, you know, to the extent there's some colloquy about that, limited though it was. I mean, how do you say she didn't consider it when she says, I find the balancing test weighs in favor of non-disclosure here? that's troubling to me, because you're essentially, or I fear, asking us at some level to say, yeah, she mouthed the words, but she didn't really consider it. And I'm not sure what the how we could, as a appellate court, do that.
Well, the shell of articulating the test never demonstrates any meaningful consideration and use of it for a reviewing court's consideration if there's nothing to react to. And as I was saying, Judge, she articulated some rationale under the first prong, none under the second, other than saying, I considered it. And so there's nothing for us or a reviewing court to know whether or not she meaningfully or at all applied the law.
Mr. Subi.
And so I would say, if I may, Judge, just finish the sentence. The omission is just as bad as the statements under the first prong, which are legally wrong. There's nothing sacrosanct about email communications as a form of communication, because it ignores what the content is. And she never looked at or talked with us about, and on the record, the content and our concerns with the content. Not that they were our articulations of some shading and value judgments. We had in front of us, in front of the court, the PUC's own emails that indicated, to use the phrasing of the factor from the Supreme Court in the White decision, whether there is a reason to believe the documents shed light on governmental misconduct. We have a colorable case for that. I'm not saying that the court has to decide whether or not the PUC commissioners demonstrated bias under the statute that governs their ethical codes of conduct. But there is more than an indicia, more than a colorable case there. And that's what the White case says entitles someone to overcome the government's interest in secrecy and compel the disclosure of these documents. And we believe we have satisfied that test. And it is for that reason the relief requested is to ask this court to do what the district court did not do, and that is to compel the release of those documents because of the basis of the record before this court. I'm sorry, Judge.
Mr. Seeby, as part of the findings that you would expect from the trial court, would those findings include whether or not the protected material was made before the decision or as part of the decision?
You know, she found that the deliberative process privilege was in place. And in the court below, we challenged the application of the deliberative process privilege because there was no process that the PUC had before it. So there was no official business, or at least that was the state's defense. And that's why we raised this open meetings issue. It's not that we're asking the court below or this court to find a violation of the Open Meeting Act, open meeting law. Just merely look at it as part of the policy of transparency in government and the fact that the open meeting law requires and says that the citizens of the state have an interest in not having its business conducted behind closed doors by policymaking officials. So we don't have here deliberations by the PUC in a process. No docket was opened that it was tendering these decisions that they wanted to keep secret as pre-decisional. We don't have any of that. So yes, Judge, we challenged all of those and questioned all of those things in the court below. But before this court, the issue is on appeal that even accepting the application of deliberative process privilege, it is not an absolute privilege. It's a qualified privilege. And we believe the circumstances in the record allow us to overcome the application of that privilege to compel the disclosure of these documents for the purpose of the public and CMA's knowledge of what those communications contain, because we have a colorable case of governmental misconduct, and there are no compelling governmental interests in keeping those documents secret.
I know you want to reserve time for rebuttal. I would like you to clarify for me the open meeting law. Your argument has been unclear to me. I think where we've ended up in your reply brief is that you're saying the court should have considered that as part of its core balancing test. Is that your argument?
That is the argument.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. May I inquire if I'm at liberty to come back up for rebuttal?
We'll give you a little rebuttal time. You bet, Mr. Seeby.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Counsel, you can take an extra minute because I'm going to give an extra minute to Mr. Seavey.
Fair enough. Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Assistant Attorney General Erin Overturf, counsel for the state defendants. My attorney registration number is 40187. This case is very narrow in scope and is limited to determining whether the district court abused its discretion in holding the state defendants properly withheld the contested documents under CORA's deliberative process privilege. This court should affirm the district court's order for two reasons. First, because the district court properly performed the balancing test associated with the deliberative process privilege as set forth by the Colorado Supreme Court in White and codified within CORA. Second, the district court properly considered CMA's arguments concerning the public interest in disclosure, including its passing references to an alleged violation of the open meetings law. I'd like to turn to the state's first argument, which is that the district court recognized and applied all appropriate legal standards. And Mr. Seavey discussed in some detail the process by which this privilege is invoked, and so I'd like to just provide a bit of background, if I may. In order to invoke the deliberative process privilege, the custodian needs to prepare an index of the privileged documents and also needs to prepare an affidavit discussing why disclosure of those documents would be harmful. The district court reviewed the state's index and affidavits and found that the state satisfied all these technical steps necessary to invoke the privilege. As a result, according to White, where the government has met the procedural requirements for assertion of the privilege presumptively applies. And once it has been established, the privilege should be honored unless the party seeking disclosure, in this case CMA, is able to show the privilege doesn't actually apply or is able to show that necessity requires production of the document. And under CORA, they've articulated a balancing test that the district court is supposed to use. The privilege can be overcome if the beneficial effects of public scrutiny upon the quality of governmental decision-making outweigh the public interest in frank discussion within the government. In all rulings, the district court undertook this first prong of the balancing test that Mr. Seavey has spent some time discussing. Judge Lemon found that the state defendants properly invoked the privilege by jumping through all the technical hoops, if you will. The district court went on to find that there was a public interest in protecting these types of documents. And contrary to CMA's assertions, it did not focus its attention merely on the substance or, excuse me, the character of the communications, that they were email communications. Rather, if you look at the transcript at page 70, the district court specifically finds that there's a public interest in protecting the underlying types of conversations. The district court says, we don't want the governor or any of these executive agency people surrounded by other people walking on eggshells and being terribly fearful about what they say and what they discuss. That's not what we want. We don't want it for government decision making. It makes lousy decisions. And that's not about the type of communication. That's about the content of the communication. And in so doing, she found a very strong public interest in maintaining the privilege for these types of documents. Now, after the hearing, the district court went on to apply the second prong of that balancing test. And she did this by undertaking an in-camera review of the documents in order to determine whether for any one individual document, the public's interest in disclosure outweighed that previously articulated public interest in maintaining the privilege.
Can I ask you about that, Ms. Overturf? I had a little bit of concern when I was reading what the court's review and its order on reconsideration. The court seemed very focused on whether there are communications with third parties, as opposed to the communications among, for example, the PUC commissioners or the state actors. I guess I'd be curious to, you can educate me on exactly what do we have on the record that suggests the court looked at anything beyond were these communications with third parties or not? She seemed pretty focused on that.
Sure, and I agree, Your Honor. I think she did focus on whether the communications were cloaking any impermissible conversations with third party or non-governmental actors. And I think the reason why she focused there is because that's where CMA focused at the district court level. When you look at the briefing before the district court, you'll find that CMA raised two arguments in support of disclosure of the documents. First, it argued that its personal interest in obtaining access to the documents was high because the documents had the potential to show bias on the part of the PUC commissioners or other government actors. And second, CMA argued that intergovernmental communications may impermissibly or improperly cloak communications with non-governmental entities, such as regulated utilities. And so the district court appropriately focused her analysis on the record before her and the arguments that CMA made before her. So that's why she seems so intent on this idea that the documents may be cloaking conversations that should have otherwise been provided to CMA. Once she performed this balancing test as a result of the in-camera review, the district court issued a written order in which she held that the public's interest in disclosure in the form of discovering these types of cloaked conversations did not outweigh the previously articulated public interest in maintaining the privilege. And in fact, when you look at CMA's motion for reconsideration in this case at page 2, they actually acknowledge that the district court understood and applied the appropriate balancing test in the initial order. In short, the district court applied the appropriate balancing test and utilized all appropriate legal standards, and therefore her decision is not an abuse of discretion. This brings us to the state's second argument, which is that the district court properly considered all of CMA's arguments concerning the public interest in disclosure, including its passing references to an alleged violation of the open meetings law. Now, in its briefing before this court, CMA places great emphasis on these alleged violations of the open meetings law. And Judge Gabriel, I think you got to some confusion that the state has also shared in the scope of their open meetings law argument. Now, whether an actual violation of the open meetings law occurred is not at issue in this case, although a separate division of the district court did find in a different case that no violation of the open meetings law did occur. Yet CMA argues that the district court should have explicitly considered the allegation of a violation of the open meetings law as a factor in support of that public interest balancing test that we were talking about earlier. And again, when you look at the briefing and you look at the record as it was before the district court, you'll find that CMA didn't brief this issue of an alleged violation of the open meetings law. In fact, CMA, at the time the district court issued her original written order, made one passing reference to an alleged violation of the open meetings law, which is at page 14 of the transcript at line 7. Aside from that passing allegation that some violation of the open meetings law had occurred, the open meetings law was certainly not the focus of this case as the district court understood it. So therefore, again, the district court, when she applied that balancing test, really focused her energies on the arguments that CMA actually presented to her, which were arguments about whether these communications impermissibly cloaked conversations that should have been disclosed, and whether the communications otherwise evinced some sort of bias on behalf of the PUC commissioners or other government officials. And while the district court did not explicitly address CMA's passing reference to the open meetings law, it did apply the appropriate balancing test, and it considered the appropriate factors.
Can I ask you, Ms. Overturf, and really I'm going to give you, oh, I would like you to respond to Mr. Seavey's. He argues vigorously and passionately that the court mouthed the words about the balancing test repeatedly, but didn't really apply it, particularly the second piece. Could you respond to that? I mean, what's your response to him?
Sure. In response, I would primarily remind this court about the standard of review here, which is abuse of discretion. And as the Colorado Supreme Court held in Muckle, under the abuse of discretion standard, an appellate court must affirm the trial court's decision if there is any evidence in the record to support the trial court's finding. That's a pretty low bar for the district court, if we can be perfectly frank. And I think that bar has been surpassed here. I think the district court in her oral rulings found there was a significant public interest in maintaining the privilege. She then undertook an in-camera review to review each document, which is no easy task, and see if the public interest in disclosure outweighed that privilege. And she found that it didn't.
That's conclusory, isn't it? How can we test the discretion of the trial court without seeing what findings were made to support her ultimate conclusion?
I'm not sure what additional findings the district court would need to apply. I think it may very well be that if CMA had its druthers, it would have written a more detailed order that addressed the factors in significantly more detail. However, the standard of review is not, would this court have written a better order? The standard of review is abuse of discretion. And the state does not believe that the district court's order, although admittedly it is somewhat sparse, is so sparse as to constitute an abuse of discretion. And therefore, we don't believe that the district court's order should be overturned. And again, getting back to this idea that the district court somehow abused her discretion by failing to explicitly discuss in detail each of the arguments that CMA raised, this court held in In Re Marriage of Martin that a district court does not abuse its discretion, declines to explicitly discuss particular arguments or factors, so long as the decision is supported by the record and demonstrates application of the proper legal standards. And the state would just once again reiterate that although the district court may not have listed every single argument CMA made, no matter what the extent of their focus on that argument was, that certainly does not constitute an abuse of discretion where the appropriate legal standards have been applied and the appropriate factors have been weighed. Unless this court has any further questions, the state would state that because the district court applied the appropriate balancing test and properly found the public interest in maintaining the privilege outweighed any marginal public interest in disclosure of the documents, the state defendants respectfully request that the order of the district court be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Overturf. Mr. Seavey?
Thank you. Again, Paul Seabee on behalf of the Colorado Mining Association. Judge Graham, you were asking me about the judge articulating the standard in a two or three sentence order, and I was commenting about the difficulty of not having anything else to look at. And I would also ask the court to consider that in the course of the oral argument to the district court, the Judge Lemon asked me to discuss the authority we relied upon to support our position in the public interest balancing test. And that was the colloquy that I illuminated further in our reply brief, because we believe the state had misutilized that in its answer brief too narrowly. So we offered that entire portion of the transcript from that discussion to show that when viewed in its entirety and in the context of the discussion Judge Levin was having with me, was that she was only asking to understand our position. It was not a demonstration that she was then applying it. So the district court's statement there, or any other, fails to demonstrate that the courts are actually applied or properly applied the public interest balancing test. Further, when Judge Lemon announced her findings from the bench, her statement, which is in the record, does not demonstrate that she would apply the public interest balancing test when she reviewed the withheld documents. So there is nothing in the record, in the transcript, or in the written materials that demonstrate that she did. And the court cannot review it properly without those findings. I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Seavey. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect an opinion to issue in due course.